Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. Welcome to day three of the ICEB Midterm Executive Committee meeting. Things are going along very well. We've had a good attendance, and we welcome all of you for today. Does anyone have anyone on the executive committee have any thing to raise before we begin our program for this morning, this afternoon, this evening?
Judy, do we want to announce that the recordings are
Yes,
available?
the recordings for the last 2 days so far are available on the ICEB website and as our podcast. The podcast is called something like General Assemblies and Midterms of ICEB. If you
It's
search
actually,
ICEB, sorry,
yeah, if you
go
search
ahead.
ICEB, you find it. It is
You'll find it.
ICEB General Midterms and General Assemblies.
Right.
Depending on how particular your podcast feed is.
All right, anything else? All right, we have two invited speakers today. Michelle McDonnell is the director of the National Research and Training Center on Blindness and Low Vision at Mississippi State University, where she has been conducting research since 2003. And Jennifer Ottowitz is a research associate and older blind specialist with NRTC. She is a certified vision rehabilitation therapist with over 30 years of experience in the field. They are going to be talking to us about making the case for Braille. Michelle, you're up.
Hello, everyone. I'm going to go ahead and share the PowerPoint that we have. Did that work?
Yep, we can see it.
Okay. And that's as much to keep us on track as anything, but I did share this PowerPoint with Judy earlier. So I hope you all had a chance to look at it if you were interested in looking at it ahead of time. So the name of our presentation is Making the Case for Braille, Research Findings, and a Training Resource for, and we put these extra words in from what was on the agenda, professionals working with adult learners, because we wanted to be sure people realize that the training resource was not for the adult learners, it's for the professionals that work with them. Okay, and before we get into all the information we wanted to share, we want to acknowledge the funding sources for the work that we do. So, for the research findings I'm going to talk about, they were developed under a grant from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, NIDLR Grant 90RTEM0007. And if you're not familiar, NIDLR stands for the National Institute on Disability, Independent Living, and Rehabilitation Research.
The training resource was developed under a grant from the Rehabilitation Services Administration, which at the time of the development of the course was part of the U.S. Department of Education.
So the research that I'm going to talk about all came, or the data all came from our Access Technology in the Workplace study, which we conducted between 2020 and 2025. And the purpose of this study was to learn more about AT use in the workplace by people who are blind or have low vision. We wanted to learn just some really even some basic things because not much research had been done related to this. So we wanted to know just which assistive technologies are being utilized at work, what challenges people experience with using AT at work. And we wanted to identify any gaps between what people need and what's available in terms of AT, and then also how AT use changed over time over that 5-year study. So we conducted a longitudinal survey study. We surveyed the same people over the course of the project. We did 4 surveys with our employed group and then 2 surveys with our unemployed participants or job seekers. And another purpose of the study, besides just learning, learning as much as we could about AT use at work, was to share the results with technology companies who would be able to respond to challenges and gaps identified. So I've been talking about this study since 2020 when we were planning it. And every time I talk about the study, either talking about it when we were planning it, talking to technology company partners, presenting at conferences, someone always asked, what about Braille? Someone always had a question or thought, was hoping we could learn certain things from this study about Braille use. So I'm going to share with you today basically all the big things we did learn about Braille from the study. So who participated? Criteria for participating were, of course, being blind or having low vision, being age 21 or older, either currently working or being interested in working and looking for a job. If they were employed, they had to use AT on the job, or if they were not employed, they had to use it regularly in their daily life. And then they had to live in the United States or Canada. So our total sample size was 471. That was mostly employed people, 369 employed people, 102 job seekers. But the results I'm going to present here today are typically subsets of the data based on some separate studies we conducted. And even though we did invite people from Canada to participate, it was overwhelmingly a US sample. It was 97% of the sample was from the US and 3% from Canada. So, vision level of our participants, 58% were totally blind. 22% were legally blind with minimal functional vision. 16% were legally blind with some functional vision, and 4% had low vision. About 60% were female. Most of them lost their vision at a younger age, 67% before the age of 5, 16% between the ages of 5 and 18, and 17% were age 19 or older when they lost their vision. And our sample was highly educated. Most had a bachelor's degree or higher. Okay, so that's a little bit of the background, and now I'm going to get into some results of some different studies that we conducted. And after I present each of these, then I'll give you a chance to ask any questions you might have, and then I'll move on to the next one. So, first, Braille skills and factors associated with those skills. So, on the first survey, we asked participants a question about their Braille skills, and the question was worded, would you describe your Braille reading skills as, and then they could select from one of these four options. They could either say no Braille skills, minimal Braille skills, such as using uncontracted grade one Braille, moderate Braille skills, such as some use of contracted grade two Braille, and proficient Braille skills, fluent and contracted grade two Braille. And so on this slide, there are the results, answers to that questions for employed participants and job seekers. And so I'm not going to read every number on the slide, but I'm going to try to, give you the picture of what the results mean. So you can tell based on the slide that people who were employed were more likely to report proficient Braille skills and less likely to report no Braille skills. So 58% of the entire employed sample said they had proficient Braille skills. Only 15.4% of them said they had no Braille skills. And then for job seekers, 45.1% said they had proficient Braille skills, and 27.5% said they had no Braille skills. And so statistically, these differences are significant. Just looking at those variables, Braille skills by employment, employed people are more likely to have higher Braille skills. So we wanted to look at this a little more closely and look at this in a multivariate model to see if what factors were associated with proficient Braille skills. So we conducted a study of 449 of our participants who were totally or legally blind. And we conducted a logistic regression where we were predicting proficient Braille skills. And in that study, we found that there were six different factors that were significantly associated with having proficient Braille skills. One was age. Younger adults, those aged 21 to 30, had the highest proficiency. Actually, 82% of our younger adults reported having proficient Braille skills, and that was followed by those aged 31 to 40, 67%, and then 61 or older, 60%. Age at vision loss was another factor. Those who lost their vision before age 5 were much more likely to have proficient Braille skills. Vision level was associated, so those who were totally blind, as opposed to legally blind, were more likely to have proficient Braille skills. Assistive technology skills, so higher self-rated assistive technology skills, was associated with having proficient Braille skills. Women had about 2 times higher odds of being proficient in Braille. And then being currently employed was associated with proficient Braille skills. So for the entire sample, the odds of having proficient Braille skills were 2 times higher for the whole sample. And then if we just looked at those people who were totally blind, we restricted the sample to people who are totally blind, the odds were closer to 4 times higher of having proficient Braille skills if you were employed. So kind of the takeaways from that are the things that stuck out to us as important and a few implications. So higher percentage of younger adults had proficient Braille skills. We thought that was really interesting. Adults who experienced vision loss early in life were more likely to have proficient Braille skills. That's not surprising necessarily, but we thought that was relevant. And then employed people, of course, were more likely to report proficient Braille skills. So some of the implications that are that we should expand opportunities to learn Braille at any age. It shouldn't just be those people who lost vision early who have proficient Braille skills. We should supply professionals should provide support and encouragement to learn Braille. And in the US, we might try some alternative methods to support Braille learning. Things like in Canada, the Braille Zoomers, or in the UK, the Brailleist Foundation. Oh, and I forgot to mention at the beginning, almost everything I'm presenting here, we have a published article related to the findings. There's just a few slides that didn't come from a study, but most of them do. And we do have the references listed at the end of the presentation. So you can look at them later if you're interested. Okay, so any questions about the Braille skills findings before I move on? And I can't, if anyone is raising hands or anything, I can't see that. So I'll just.
There are no hands raised at this
Okay.
time.
Okay. Okay. So another thing we looked at was the use of Braille technology among employed people and job seekers. So there were four Braille technologies that were asked about in the study to determine if people were using them at work. And two of them were refreshable Braille technology, which we abbreviate in the slide as RBT. So we ask about use of a Braille writer, a Braille labeling system, a Braille note-taking device, and a refreshable Braille display. And the slide shows the percentages of employed people and job seekers who use those devices in their daily life. And the slide illustrates that employed people were more likely to use these Braille devices in daily life, which probably not surprising as a higher percentage of them do have proficient Braille skills. But just as an example, for a refreshable Braille display, 43.2% of the employed sample reported using that in daily life, compared to 27.5% of the job seekers. The only tool here that was close was the Braille note taker, where 28% of the employed sample used that technology compared to 25.5% of the job seekers. So another question we asked was about, well, two questions was about training people had received to use the technology that they reported using. And as a separate question, what training needs the person still have for the technology they use? So on this slide again, we have results employed compared to job seekers. And so the first question was about whether they had received formal or whether they where they received training to use the device. And they had multiple options, and anyone who selected one of the formal training options, which were through an agency like vocational rehabilitation or another agency, through a vendor who sold the device, or through a TVI, teacher of students with visual impairments. If they received training through one or more of those methods, they were counted here as received formal training. And the employed people, I want to emphasize that the employed people on this slide, the percentages here rec or represent those who use that assistive technology at work. So, in terms of received formal training for a Braille note-taking device, 56.3% of employed people who use that at work said they received training, compared to 40.7% of job seekers who received training, of people who use that device who said they received formal training. And then for the refreshable Braille display, only 35.1% of the employed sample said that they received training on using the device, compared to 29.2% of the job seekers. So, employed people are more likely to receive formal training, or were more likely to receive formal training. And then the training needs question was, would you benefit from more training on using these different devices? And for the employed sample, about 30% of them who used a Braille note-taking device at work said they would benefit from more training on using it. And that compared to 20.8% of the job seekers. And then for a refreshable Braille display, 33.7% of the employed sample said they would benefit from more training. And 23.8% of the job seekers said they would. So again, in this case, it's training needs, but the employed sample were more likely to identify training needs. They were more likely to receive formal training, but also to say they would benefit from more training on using the devices. Another question we asked in the survey was about, for those people who use refreshable Braille technology, who encouraged them to use that technology? And most people did identify more than one source of encouragement. Most commonly, AT specialists, 41.5%, friends, 38.7%, 38% said TBI is encouraged, 28.2% said vocational rehabilitation counselors encouraged, 22.5% said family members did, 16.2% said teachers who were not TBIs. 12% said other rehabilitation professionals, 11.3% said O&M instructors, about 10% gave some other response, and then 9.2% said, well, no one encouraged me. I myself, I encouraged myself to do that. We were also curious about how people obtained the refreshable Braille technology. So for a refreshable Braille display, again, this is on the slide. I have the percentage of employed people where they receive theirs compared to job seekers. And so the most common way that an employed person in our sample re received their refreshable Braille display was that their employer purchased it. 44.6% said that. That was followed by a governmental agency paid for it, 25.4%. And then 23.8% said that they purchased it themselves. Now, for job seekers, the most common way was that an agency purchased it for them, 50%, 25% said they purchased it themselves, and then 16.7% said someone gave it to me. For a Braille note-taking device, the results were a little different for the employed. 41.8% said they purchased that Braille note-taking device themselves. 30.4% said a governmental agency paid for it, and 20.3% said an employer paid for it. And for job seekers, again, the agency purchase was the most common, 66.7% and 25.9% said they purchased it themselves. So for people who do not use refreshable braille technology at work or well or in daily life, we ask both employed and job seekers why their reasons for not using refreshable braille technology. And this was a multiple choice question where they could select any that applied to them. And so the most common reason given for not using it, 38.4% selected, I am not fast enough with braille to use it efficiently with these devices. 26.8% said I have not been introduced to or received training in using these braille devices. 26.2% said I cannot afford these braille devices. 19.5% said I do not think I need braille because my vision is adequate for print or large print. 17% said I don't think I need braille for another reason. And 12.2% said I never learned to read braille. And then another 11% provided a write-in other reason. So, kind of the takeaways or key findings from this part of the study, many refreshable braille technology users didn't receive formal training, and many would benefit from it, either initial training or additional training. And the thing that really strikes me is these are people they're using the technology at work, but they still need more training. Service providers play a crucial role in encouraging people to use refreshable braille technology, but so do family and friends. And challenges such as limited braille proficiency, lack of training, and high cost impede refreshable braille technology adoption and use. So the implications encourage use of refreshable braille technology, that professionals should do this and urge families to do the same. And we should increase access to training opportunities for braille and refreshable braille technology. And then, of course, so we need to improve the affordability and access to refreshable braille technology. So, any questions about any of that before I move on?
We do have a question, Francis FM.
Hi, Michelle. This is Frances Marion. This is really interesting to me. Did you, since the your findings from that other study indicated that it was mostly younger people who tended to use Braille at work. Was there also kind of a correlation between the folks who were using any kind of Braille technology? Did they tend to be the younger people? And I'm also wondering whether some of them, when if you asked when they first started learning. Yes, they wanted more training and things, but I was just wondering how many of them kind of come into the job market already with those skills, having learned them in school or not, if you have any indication.
So one thing I want to say to clarify is that we didn't find that younger people were more likely to be using Braille at work. We found that they were a higher proportion of that younger group said they had proficient Braille skills.
Okay.
But that study was not looking at whether they were using it at work. That was
Technology.
just, yeah, so that was just the proficient Braille skills. And in fact, I'll talk a little bit later that, it's not the youngest people that are more likely to be using the technology at work, but
Okay.
okay. And then the other part of your question, or the your question was about whether they come, what we know about like when they learned
Yeah.
Braille. And we did have a question. We did in one of the surveys, we did ask them about at what age did they learn Braille and at what age did they start using a refreshable Braille device. So we do have that information. I don't have that in the presentation, but if you like, if that's something you want to look at, like we can, the data is there. We could look at
Okay, thanks. I'll reach out to you at
it.
another
Okay.
time.
No other hands up at this time.
Okay, so a little bit about the use of Braille technology at work. And this was based on a study that included totally and legally blind participants who used a computer screen reader at work. So they had to, meet the vision level, and they had to use a computer at work to be included in this study. So when we limited the sample like that, the Braille skill level was a little higher. There were only 7% who said they had no Braille skills. About 13% said they had minimal Braille skills. 15.5% said they had moderate Braille skills, and almost 65% of them said they had proficient Braille skills. And one of the first things we looked at was just whether they were using Braille technology on the job. And if they used any of those four technologies I mentioned before, they were considered a Braille user, and that was 66.1% of that sample used Braille on the job, and 52.6% used refreshable Braille technology. And the most commonly used was a refreshable Braille display, 46.4%, followed by a Braille writer at 31.9%. And then 28.1% used a Braille labeling system and a Braille or a Braille note-taking device. Okay, and then we're curious about what work tasks people were using their refreshable Braille technology for. So in the survey, we ask about whether the participants performed four specific work tasks. And so they would indicate yes or no, and then we use seven of those tasks for this study. And in this table on the slide, there is the work task, and then there's a column labeled N, which is the number of participants who use refreshable Braille technology at work and perform that particular work task. And then the last column is the used RBT, the percentage of those who use their refreshable Braille technology for that work task. So I hope that makes sense. Did someone have a question? Okay. So I'll just go over the task and then the percentage that actually used refreshable Braille technology to complete that task. And these are in order from most likely to use to least likely. So take notes in a meeting. So for all the people who reported that they do that at their work and they are also a refreshable Braille technology user, 82.9% said they use their Braille technology for that task. Make formal presentations, 64.4% use their refreshable Braille for that task. 55.4% use the refreshable Braille technology to use a computer to access the internet, use email, or create text documents. 42.9 use their technology to use a computer to access the organization's database or software system. 42% to create spreadsheets, 41.7% to create presentations, and 35.7% to participate in a virtual meeting. So obviously, people aren't, people are using their refreshable Braille technology for certain tasks more than others. So in this study, we were focusing on the use of refreshable Braille technology at work. And so we wanted to know if, what specific factors were associated or would make it more likely for someone to use refreshable Braille technology at work. And so we ran a logistic regression model where we predicted refreshable Braille technology use. We only included people, though, who had moderate or proficient Braille skills because we thought very likely if they didn't have at least moderate skills, it would be very unlikely that they were using refreshable Braille technology. And so out of five variables, only four were significantly associated with refreshable Braille technology use. And that was Braille skill, which is, an obvious one, but also age. So we found that people with proficient Braille skills were 11.6 times more likely to use refreshable Braille technology at work, right? That makes a lot of sense. And we found as age increased, the odds of using refreshable Braille technology at work also increased. When you were holding Braille skill level constant as age increased, odds of using refreshable Braille technology at work went up. Gender wasn't related, vision level, or having a non-visual disability. None of those things were related. So on this slide, I thought you might be interested, given that, the age differences that were the age being associated with refreshable braille technology use. On the slide, there are the percentage of refreshable braille technology users by age category. And so for age 21 to 30, 55.6% reported using refreshable braille technology. For age 31 to 40, 51.2%. For age 41 to 50, 48.7. For age 51 to 60, 47.8. And for age 61 or older, 70.3% use refreshable braille technology. And so some kind of key findings from that study. Most people who use Braille AT on the job also use refreshable Braille technology. There were only 13.5% who only used a Braille writer or a Braille labeling system. Having proficient Braille skills was the key factor in using refreshable Braille technology at work. So that's, that kind of points to the need for more opportunities for Braille awareness and instruction for adults who experience vision loss. And the youngest age group had the highest percentage with proficient Braille skills, but the oldest age group was most likely to use refreshable Braille technology at work. So that kind of made me wonder, why aren't more younger people using refreshable Braille technology at work when they have, a high percentage have the proficient Braille skills? Okay, any questions about that part of the or that study before I move on?
This is FM again. What really that is exactly the question, and that was kind of what I was getting at earlier, is that as an educator, I'm always thinking about, are we preparing folks for the world of work and what tasks they need, what tools they need? So that is indeed a really interesting question. Do you have any thoughts about that? Maybe Natalie does, or Jennifer, or
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I thought, well, one thing I thought about was, is it the cost? Is it that they can't, if they're just starting off in their career, maybe they can't afford a device, and maybe, and I don't know, maybe if they're in a job where they're just starting out, maybe their employer would be less likely to provide the device for them. Those are the only things that I've really thought about so far. And Natalie?
yes, hi, this is Natalie. This is really interesting. I have so many questions, but I will only ask one. I actually wanted to know whether, because you mentioned that the younger people have higher self, reported proficiency in Braille. And so thinking about age, do you know, or do you have in the data information about whether there's an association between age or the age at which someone learned Braille and how often they're using Braille, and whether that, plays a role into how proficient they feel, just around, frequency of usage or anything like that?
Okay, so the question is if there's a relationship between their current age and the age they learned Braille and their
Well,
use of it now?
I guess more, when we're talking about Braille proficiency, is it the age of the participant, or is that the older people are just not using it as much, and so they feel less proficient?
I read off what our definition of proficient was, which was just, which was about grade two Braille, fluent in grade two Braille. Or I'd have to go back to that slide to get it exactly right. But I don't, it wasn't about, how much, any like using it. It was just like how, whether they knew kind of the grade two Braille and were fluent in it. So Yeah, so I'm not sure that that would be like you, so your thought is that maybe older people who hadn't been using it much might have not said they were proficient or might have not considered themselves proficient.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't want to derail. I think it's all really interesting, and the information might actually be in your slide, so I'll take a look again. But I was more just curious about, how often participants are using Braille and whether, that influences how proficient they feel or how often, their decision to use it at work. But I'll let you continue because otherwise I'll just take up the rest of the time with my questions. But it's really interesting, so thank you.
So, and one thing I want to be sure you know is that this data is there, and I'm presenting to you like all the studies we've done with the Braille, but there are potentially other things you could investigate. We don't have a variable about how often they're using Braille. I don't believe we have that like a or even a proxy for that, other than just that they use the devices versus they don't. But how often they use them, we don't actually have that. But we do have the age they learned Braille, the age they first started using refreshable Braille technology. We have a lot of variables that might be interesting to you to use in a study of your own, and the data is going to be available. So anyway,
Thank you. Thank you.
I'll get back to this, and then so based on what we had learned so far about the use of Braille, we wanted to learn more about how and why people have decided to use refreshable Braille technology at work. So we explored that in our third survey. So this study was only 110 people, and it was 110 people who participated in survey three who use refreshable Braille technology at work. And we asked them, we provided them with a list of options for reasons that they might use refreshable Braille technology, and they selected all that applied, or they were able to write in an other response. And so I'm going to read to you the most common responses, and I'm going to note that more than 75% of the people who responded selected four or more reasons that they use refreshable Braille technology. So 84.6% said it allows me to use my devices in noisy environments. 80% said it allows me to easily access details about large numbers and spelling. 77.3% said it is more efficient than using only audio. 70.9% said it allows me to attend to other conversations in audio while reading information in Braille. 55.5% said it allows me to easily access details about formatting and paragraph settings. 48.2% said Braille is my preferred mode of reading and accessing information. 20% wrote in some kind of other reason. And then 17.3% said I require access in a format other than Braille. And so I just wanted to share a few of the other write in other reasons that we got. So someone said, I find it easier to concentrate on and retain technical and complex material when I read it using Braille. Another person said, in some cases, it is much easier to read and understand code, such as C, HTML, and JavaScript in Braille, especially when indentation is required. And several people wrote in an other response about using it for coding. Another person said, it allows me to read to my students. Another person said faster and more accurate for work. And then another person said it is the easiest way to access information and take notes when I am in-person meetings. I could not give the long presentations and webinars required by my job if I could not read my notes or scripts from a Braille display. So that person's really saying they don't feel like they could do their job without it. And then another person said, Braille is simply my native reading and writing tool. So we asked people about what other technology they use their refreshable Braille technology with, and 76.4% use it with a computer, 52.7% use it with their smartphone, 10% use it with a tablet, and 65.5% said they use it as a standalone device, just with the built-in features. So One question we asked was, how important is your refreshable Braille device to accomplishing your work tasks? And so people could select from, we had an important scale with six options. And so 47.3% said their refreshable Braille device is essential to accomplishing their work tasks. 21.8% said very important. 16.4% said important. 6.4% said moderately important, 7.3% said somewhat important, and only 0.9% said it was not important to accomplishing their work tasks. Another question we ask is, what three work tasks is your refreshable Braille technology most helpful for compared to using speech alone? And this was an open-ended question. People could write in whatever whatever their answer was. They could put in three different work tasks, and then we categorized their answers into eight different categories. So the one that was most commonly mentioned, or the most people mentioned it, 45.5% of people mentioned a task related to proofreading and editing. And this included things like checking spelling and formatting, verifying numbers, ensuring the accuracy of information. 43.6% of people mentioned something related to reading and comprehension. And this ranged from, reading things like emails, long documents, numbers, names. And for some people, they really emphasized that they really like to use their Braille device when attention to detail was important. 37.3% said mentioned a task related to note-taking and organization. 30.9% mentioned a task related to presenting and teaching. 21.8% mentioned a task related to task management and multitasking. 19.1% mentioned data entry and processing. 14.5 mentioned something related to writing or composing, including writing music. And then 10% mentioned coding, programming, or testing. So some of the key findings from this part, I thought it was really interesting that more than half of workers are using their refreshable Braille technology with their phones. Other people may not, like I was kind of surprised by that. Other people may not be, but I thought it was really interesting that most people who use their refreshable Braille technology at work do consider it essential or very important to accomplish their work. Some of the key reasons people gave for using refreshable Braille technology was access in noisy environments, access to details not available with audio, more efficient than audio, and then ability to access information in Braille while listening to something else. And this, all of this work made me think about that Braille proficiency and the ability to utilize refreshable Braille technology may provide the opportunity to pursue a wider variety of careers. And I have to say, that's not something that's data-based. Like, I couldn't find any evidence in the data for that, but just knowing that certain tasks are easier and, you're able to be more efficient and in some cases, maybe only really do those tasks if you have that refreshable Braille technology. I think that's a really interesting, or I think it's really a possibility. We don't have hard data for that, but. And then I'll go on to the summary, and I have just kind of, and this is just kind of going over the key findings again, but then a few questions related to those findings. So one of the key findings, I think, was that the higher proportion of younger people in our sample had proficient Braille skills. And this is one thing that we wrote in our paper is that, is this evidence that the Braille initiatives from the past worked? In terms of Braille and employment, and this was one of those things that a lot of people were asking about, like what can the study tell us about Braille and employment? So employed people were significantly more likely to have proficient Braille skills. And being employed was associated with proficient Braille skills, even after we controlled for all those other significant factors. So I think this is exciting. I think it's, but we have to note that the findings don't prove causality. We can't, we're not proving that using Braille means you're more likely to be employed. People who experience blindness or low vision before they start K through 12 school were much more likely to have proficient Braille skills. How can we ensure that people who experience vision loss later in life have access to Braille instruction and be can become proficient also? I think there was such a noticeable difference between those who lost vision before they started school and those who lost vision sometime during K through 12. I think the importance of refreshable Braille technology for accomplishing work tasks and its many benefits for most users is a really powerful finding from the study. So, that brings up the question, how can we address the barriers to using refreshable Braille technology? Lack of Braille skills, lack of training on the devices, the high cost of those devices. And another question, does ability to use refreshable Braille technology open doors for career opportunities? So, I think it's important when working with youth to consider career goals and, the typical associated job tasks to help determine how important refreshable Braille technology is for that individual. I think that's one possibility that, we could really try to look at, well, what does the person want to do? And if it's going to be a job that requires a lot of the tasks that people say Braille is so important, or if Braille technology is so important for, make sure they, have the opportunity to use that, know how to use a refreshable Braille technology. Or, the other thing would just be, we have no idea what kids are going to ultimately end up doing. It's important for everybody to learn how to use refreshable Braille technology so they could have any job they might want to in the future. Okay, and so that's all my information. Does anyone have any questions about the information presented or other questions about Braille use or refreshable Braille technology use that we didn't answer?
James has his hand up.
Hi.
Hello.
The data, does it actually show proportion of the time that people used their Braille technology standalone on a phone, on a computer, etc.? Because that might also be an interesting.
No, we
So
didn't.
for example, with my job, I very, very rarely use the standalone features of the Braille display, but I often, if not nearly always, use the Braille display with the computer. However, if you ask me the question, do I use the standalone functions? I would have to say yes.
Yes, and
But
no,
it's
we do.
95%,
Right.
5%, if not worse.
Right. And no, that's one question we didn't ask about frequency of use or frequency of use overall or frequency with the different
Yeah, that would
other
be useful.
devices. Yeah. Okay.
We have a couple of comments from observers. Would now be an okay time to allow those as well?
Sure.
Okay. Larry Johnson. And you'll have to unmute once I give you the permissions to talk. Okay.
Okay, there I am.
There you are.
Actually, I have two questions. One of them is similar to James' question, and that is if you found any way to find out how important Braille was in the performance of their job. And sort of a tangential question to that is, did they feel that they could be doing the job they're doing without Braille?
So we have the question about, and I'm going to go ahead and go back to that slide. We had the question about How important is your refreshable Braille device to accomplishing your work tasks? And overwhelmingly, people said it was very important. 47.3% said it was essential. 21.8% said very important. 16.4% said important. So, vast majority are saying it's very important to accomplishing their work.
Did you in any way get information about whether they thought the job could be done without the use of Braille?
No, we did not ask a question like that.
Okay, that could be really very relevant because I am a vice president of an organization that is really strongly committed to promoting the use of Braille. And one of the things that keeps coming up is, well, how relevant or how significantly important is knowing Braille to becoming employed?
Yeah, that would have been a good question to include when we were asking them
Okay.
about that.
Thank you.
Okay, and we have Artemis Gilbert.
Hi, thank you for the presentation. I was wondering if you factored in or found any correlation between Braille proficiency or Braille technology use with education level or socioeconomic class or income.
We would have looked at that. So I'm answering this off the top of my head, but I'm pretty sure we looked at education level to see if that was important in a few of our different studies, and I don't believe it was. But you could actually follow up with me if you want to, and I can go back and look at the specific studies to confirm that. And you said education level, or did you say socioeconomic?
Yeah, class or income.
Yeah. We did look at income. And I'm sorry, I could not tell you that. I don't want to tell you something wrong. I do know we looked at it in one of the studies. So why don't you follow up with me, and we can, once I can go back and look at the actual study, and I can tell you what we found, and I can refer you to the correct study.
All right, thank you.
Okay, and that was all of the questions from observers.
Okay, so then I'll turn it over to Jennifer to talk about the training resource.
All right, thank you so much. And again, I apologize for my voice. Thank you for your patience. And it truly is an honor to be here presenting to you today. So we're going to talk next about a training resource that is available for professionals and those teaching Braille to adults. And so if we can go to the next slide, please, Michelle, that's titled Increasing Opportunities.
Okay.
All right, one of the key takeaways that Michelle noted a few times as a result of the AT in the Workplace study was the increased need for opportunities for adults to learn Braille. And at NRTC, we realized that this is not only a need for access to information and training materials, but also a need for learner willingness and motivation. Right? Adults need to want to learn Braille. And then also a need for positive learning experiences, too. We at the NRTC also know that teaching Braille involves more than just knowing the code. Now, here in the US, a lot of times people are hired to teach Braille or maybe become interested and pursue teaching Braille because they have a strong passion for Braille. They love Braille. They may know the code, they may know the rules, but that doesn't necessarily mean they know all the ins and outs of teaching Braille to a wide variety of adult learners with a wide variety of learning needs. We know at the NRTC that there's an increase, a need for the increased availability of resources presenting strategies for teaching Braille to adults. A lot of the curriculum teach the code, but don't offer the strategies for teaching. And then we also know that there's a need to reframe how Braille instruction is presented. So I'm not sure how about other countries. I'd love to know how this works for you all. But in the US, oftentimes Braille is presented as a standalone skill. So the question is often asked to people, are you interested in learning Braille? And it's a yes or no question. And oftentimes for adults, the answer is no, because they're not quite sure yet how they might be able to apply Braille in their everyday lives. So these are some of the reasons why we at NRTC wanted to have a resource, a training resource available. So next slide, please. And when we talk about an increased willingness of learners, and motivation to learn Braille, it's important to address misconceptions. And so these are some of the things that we promote. And Michelle discussed these as takeaways from the research as well. And the first is just to emphasize that Braille can be useful for people with remaining vision and not just useful for people who are totally blind. I think we all know here today that Braille can be useful for people with any level of vision. It does not have to be the primary mode of communication, but it can offer valuable information for labeling, for those times when the environmental conditions cannot be optimized for reading Braille, for reading print materials or information. And so Braille can be a handy tool in the toolbox, no matter your level of vision. We also like to promote that Braille can be useful for those who have functional goals and not just those interested in using Braille for extensive reading. Michelle mentioned several of the tasks that people are using Braille for in the workplace. And when you think about other daily living tasks people use Braille for, it's not just about reading novels, that even a minimal amount of Braille can be useful in a person's life where they don't even have to know the entire alphabet. And then we also want to reinforce the idea that Braille is a tool for literacy and not something to be ashamed of. I once worked with a client who was in her mid-20s learning Braille. And she lived away from home. It was lived out on her own. But when her mother found out she was learning Braille, her mother said to her, "Why are you giving up on your vision?" And she was at a point in her own adjustment journey to vision loss that she was able to understand that she was not giving up on her vision, that Braille was an important tool she could use to help her function. And so sometimes it's not just the attitude of the individuals themselves with vision loss, but the attitude of their families that can be a barrier. And the good news is she was able to help explain that to her mother. And it all ended up very positively that she is now a fluent Braille reader. So next slide, please. So a lot of the information in the training resource that I'll share in just a moment, but it came from the teaching of Malcolm Knowles. So Malcolm Knowles was a teacher and researcher in the field of adult education, and he identified several characteristics of adult learners that help inform effective instruction, including instruction in Braille. And some of the things that he noted were that learning, including learning Braille, should help solve a need or problem. And this is going back to what I was talking about reframing instruction. If we can present Braille as an option for a way to meet a need or solve a problem, not just a standalone skill, it can be more meaningful. So if the person wants to be able to, maybe read the numbers on their microwave, the settings on their microwave. This can help, Braille can help solve that problem. Braille can also be used to achieve a goal. Maybe someone wants to play games with their family, with their grandchildren, participate in their religious activities, and be able to access information that will help them with both writing notes or reading out information as part of that. So Braille can be very helpful for that. And that Braille is can be very practical and immediately useful. That adult learners aren't just learning for future learning's sake, but they really want it to be meaningful and relevant today. And these are all things that we promote in the training resource. So next slide, please. So now let's talk about the training resource. So it is available from the National Research and Training Center on Blindness and Low Vision. And it was originally developed by Hadley. And we at the NRTC inherited it and immediately set out to revise, revamp, reorder it. And we, first of all, must give a huge thank you and extend our deepest appreciation and gratitude to Dr. Natalina Martiniello, for her work on the team. She played a key role on the team that revised this offering, and her contributions were truly valuable. So, Natalie, at any time, if you have anything to share, please feel free to jump in. I can share too that to date, well, the course launched in 2024, and to date, we've had 275 people enroll. So we're very excited about that. It is a free, online, on-demand, asynchronous training course, which means it's free to any professional who may be teaching Braille to adults. It's available online, and it can be started at any time of the day, any time of the year. There's no set start date or end date, and you can proceed through the course at a pace that's comfortable for you and can go back to the material in the course as well. The course does not teach the Braille code, Braille rules, or formatting. It's assumed that the professional knows the Braille code, Braille rules, and has basic knowledge of formatting before they begin the course. So when I say course, it's not something that has assignments. It's not a full semester like at a university. It really is a series of text-based modules, again, that can be taken at someone's own pace. This training course presents assessment and instructional techniques for both reading and writing Braille. Sometimes you'll find a curriculum that may talk about teaching strategies for reading or writing, but this actually includes both. And it discusses strategies to keep learners motivated throughout the learning process. Sometimes adults can get discouraged when they're not able to read Braille as quickly or as easily as they used to be able to read print visually. And so it's really important to find ways to keep them motivated. And the course also gives ideas for how to customize instruction to meet unique learning needs. Like I said, a lot of times adults come with unique learning challenges, learning needs, and we offer some ways to adapt. So next slide, please. The title of the course is simply called Teaching Braille to Adults. And on this slide, we offer a link to the course in our course catalog. You would need to create an account on our Canvas learning management system if you don't already have one and not already taken other courses with us. But once you create that account with a simple email and a self-created password, then you have access to not only this course, but our full catalog of courses as well. And on this slide, I've listed out the modules. I'm going to go through these quickly, just to give you an idea of what the course covers. So module one is learning styles and motivation, somewhat self-explanatory, but gets into ideas behind what might motivate someone and how you can utilize that and tap into that when you're piquing people's interest in Braille and providing instruction. Module two is foundational Braille skills. So this includes things like finger position, finger pressure, hand movements, tracking, posture, all of those beginning Braille skills, including just simple distinguishing of symbols. So maybe not identifying letters per se, but does this symbol feel the same as the first symbol on the line, or how many of the same symbols are in a row, but just being able to work on those foundational skills. Module three is teaching Braille reading, basic concepts. Module four is teaching Braille writing, and this includes writing with a slate and stylus, as well as a Braille writer. Now, the use of refreshable Braille displays is mentioned throughout the entire course, but we recognize, and Michelle alluded to this earlier with the AT work in the workplace study, that more could definitely be done related to the use of refreshable Braille displays and training folks on how to use them. So we do recognize that as well. Module five talks about learners with additional needs, so whether they are cognitive impairments, intellectual impairments, physical impairments, English as a second language, any type of additional learning need, that module offers some helpful suggestions for ways to modify your assessment and instruction. And then finally, module six talks about increasing Braille reading speed. Michelle noted in our study that one of the reasons people are not using refreshable Braille displays are because they feel that their Braille reading speed is too slow. And so this helps give ideas for how you can work with individuals to increase their reading speed. And when we think about ideal reading speed, just a note that it really is dependent on the context and the situation and the task. So somebody using Braille for work who may be reading a Braille script on a refreshable Braille display as they're working their customer service job, carrying on a conversation with someone that they're listening to through their headphones, they may need and want a much faster Braille reading speed than someone who's casually reading a magazine on a Sunday afternoon. And even really fast Braille readers are not always reading at their top reading speed every time their fingers touch Braille. So we do talk about that in the course as well, that there's not one set Braille reading speed that people must achieve to be successful. All right, next slide, please. So we talk in the in our training course about choosing an approach. It's really important to match the approach that you're using to the learner's goals, whether or not to use uncontracted or contracted Braille. Depending on a person's goals, all they may need to learn is uncontracted Braille. If all they want to do is be able to use Braille to be able to operate the buttons on the elevator panel, for example, I've worked with clients who had only that goal for using Braille. You want to consider the order of symbols and when to introduce contractions. Some curriculum introduces letters in order, in alphabetic order. But sometimes, if you're working with people more frequently, if they have a more immediate need and motivation, you may use a curriculum that mixes up the letters, that introduces contractions along with letters. And you can think about ways to just introduce contractions so that you'll have more meaningful words, a larger vocabulary that people can use to begin functionally using Braille. You want to identify the learner's reading level, and there's several ways you can do this. We talk about this in the course. There's some informal reading inventories. You can use CLOSE procedures to do this. You can use the International Reading Speed Test, not only to assess their speed, but also their comprehension as well. And then just through gathering of information about their literacy, past literacy skills and reading. habits. You want to think about whether you're going to use a formal Braille curriculum, homemade materials, a combination of both, or the I Am Able approach. And if you're not familiar, I Am Able stands for Individualized Meaning-Centered Approach to Braille Literacy Education. It was an approach developed by Dr. Diane Wormsley for people of all ages with different learning needs, but it can be really helpful for people who are struggling to read Braille. And it introduces, my oversimplified explanation of it is it's almost like a sight word approach to reading Braille, where people begin by distinguishing just specific characteristics about a word. They're not reading letter by letter. They're using the length of the word, the shape of the overall word, the pattern under their fingers that they feel. Are there some straight lines at the beginning, in the middle, at the end? But then they use that information to distinguish one for word from the other, and you start by using a list of very meaningful words to make it more effective. And so you're just distinguishing one word from the next. And then that can eventually lead to a skills-based approach to reading. All right, next slide, please. The course also addresses some of the common issues that Braille learners face. So symbol and contraction recognition, reversals and inversals. We talk a lot about overpractice. We offer suggestions to address scrubbing, which, excuse me, let me just pause for a moment. Thank you. Scrubbing is, of course, moving your fingers up and down instead of across a line as you read Braille. Tracking issues, so moving, excuse me, sorry, from one line to the next. And then, of course, forgetting what was read. So that's can be a common occurrence with new Braille readers who are not as fluent either. So next slide, please. So with adults, you want the focus to be on teaching mechanics of successful Braille reading. Adults typically already know how to read, so they're not decoding words, but the emphasis should be on those foundational skills, the hand mechanics and tracking and move. And I'm going to pause just for a moment to give myself a break and grab a cough drop and see if anybody has questions while I indulge. So, any questions?
Natalie has her hand up.
Yes, thank you, Nat.
Hi, Jennifer. First, I mean, this was a team effort, so thank you for mentioning me, but I really want to just, put the spotlight on the incredible work that you all do. I just wanted to, it's not maybe so much a question, but to touch on something you mentioned, which was the foundational Braille literacy skills. And we had many conversations around this when we were all working on this, and we were really careful to move away from this language that is still very frequent in adult Braille instruction, which is the idea of pre-Braille. And pre-Braille are these set of skills that you should learn before you're reading Braille, and so that's why we use the words foundational Braille literacy skills, because these are skills that you continue to develop even as you start, reading meaningful words, sentences using Braille in your daily life. So rather than seeing it as, this is step one and this is step two. So anyways, but it's a great presentation, and thanks so much for sharing it with everyone.
Thank you so much, and thank you for reinforcing that point. And that is so true that all of those skills continue throughout the learning process for sure. Next slide, please. All right. So with adults, as I said, the focus should be on teaching mechanics. Oh, let me go back. I'm sorry, Michelle. I wasn't done with that slide. Teaching mechanics to adults. Attaching learning to meaningful life goals, we talked about that. Adults learn best when things are meaningful and relevant. You want to acknowledge and draw on their past learning experiences. And sometimes you have to overcome negative learning experiences that they have. You want to tap into their whatever motivates them. If they like sports, if they like to bake, you can use these to give you vocabulary words, to give you topics for stories to help read to keep them motivated. Okay, now we're ready for the next slide with the helpful tips. So we talk in the course about the importance of varying instructional strategies, that short, varied tasks actually work best for adults. So maybe instead of reading for an hour, sometimes it's a struggle when it's taking you an hour to read 3 lines of Braille. But if you practice and focus on reading for 20 minutes, then you switch to something else, it can help reduce cognitive overload for the learner and just make the learning more interesting, more engaging, and keep them motivated. You want to draw on the learner's visual memory to help make associations with different symbols. This particular letter, the letter F in Braille, looks like the top of a capital print F if they were a print reader, excuse me. And then you want to build in opportunities for success to increase confidence. And that sounds like, well, wouldn't we obviously do that? But sometimes we're so focused on just moving on through the lesson. But we definitely want to make sure we're building those opportunities for success and not pushing forward until the learner is ready. And we definitely want to begin with high interest, low vocabulary materials, and then increase the complexity and vary the formats as they increase their skills. And you want to use materials and practice activities that are meaningful to the individual. So that meaningfulness, relevancy, that's key in adult learning theory. All right, next slide, please. So we do talk about too how instruction should include that learners be are be, let learners be aware of, help them know their progress. So a little bit more than just saying, you did really well today, Natalie. What to give an idea of, you read 2 lines more today than you did yesterday. Right? Sometimes it's so hard for people to see how far they've come because they're so focused on how far they feel they have yet to go. And so you want to remind the learner about their goals and how what you're currently working on relates to that, because people get impatient. I want to be able to do this now. And sometimes it's baby steps, and you have to help them understand that every step they take is closer to their goal. You want to document their progress in specific measurable terms. And you want to give homework and practice activities to encourage reading and writing outside of your regular lessons, because that's going to help them transfer those skills. It'll reinforce what learning is happening, but it'll also help them transfer and continue those skills on their own. And then you want to share resources with them to help them continue to develop their skills long after your formal instruction has ended. So we're really excited about this course. I was just in preparation for today. I was looking back over the content and just smiling because I was so excited about all the information that Edit shares. And so we do encourage all of you to check it out, to share it with those colleagues, friends, anyone you know who may be teaching Braille to adults. And with that, I'm going to open it up to questions.
Okay, Natalie has her hand raised.
Yes, Jennifer, I won't ask any questions right now, but I did just want to thank both both you and Michelle on behalf of all of us here for presenting today. That was really, really interesting. There's a lot of information here. And I think in particular, with all the discussions we're having around the promotion of Braille, there's so many things that you've said here today that kind of strengthen that promotion work about how people are using Braille and that again, that association to employment and all of these things. So thank you so much. For those of you who don't know about the National Research and Training Center for Blindness and Low Vision, by the way, they're an amazing resource. They have lots of really great information. So definitely check them out. And I'll turn it over to others for questions.
This is Michelle. Thank you, Natalie.
Okay, FM has her hand raised.
Everybody. Last week, no, week before last, whenever it was, the AER conference was in Louisville. Jennifer, I saw you there. And I went to a session that I can't remember her name, Kathy McGuire. She's with the Yes, okay, with the New York Association for the Blind. And her presentation was really great because she talked about how they changed the intake form for this state agency. Of course, New York is a big state, and there are several these agencies across the state, and they changed the intake form because that used to be just a yes/no question, like you were saying, Jennifer, about do you want to learn Braille? And they changed the intake form to add more questions about what people's goals were, and they did a whole statewide project to encourage the rehabilitation therapists, the teachers, as well as the rehab counselors to do more Braille promotion. And they've had a real success with just by changing the format of the questions that they ask people and doing a lot more outreach and promotion of Braille. It was really exciting because I think in the last few decades there's been such a focus just on getting people through the system as quickly as possible and thinking that, oh, Braille's going to take too long, or they can just rely on audio and not giving people the opportunity to. So I was really excited about that and didn't know, Jennifer, you had heard any of that about that project or how something like that could be expanded to other places.
Yes, so yeah, so we're familiar with Kathleen and her work at
Kathleen.
Visions, and yeah, so they are doing some amazing work to get the word out about Braille, to present it in a very positive way, and it's so exciting that they did change the intake form and it's having such a positive impact, because so oftentimes, like we've said, it's that yes no question. There's an assumption, well, older adults don't want to learn Braille. Primarily because, I think they're thinking they don't want to read books and magazines, but again, Braille can be used for more, so much more than that. Or technology is so incredible, and we just need to use our eye devices or whatever, electronic devices, and we can do everything, and Braille may not be as relevant. So it's great to see that organizations are doing more to increase awareness about Braille, which speaks to exactly what Michelle was talking about, having a need for in the study. And so I know, yeah, we're looking at that and ways to help try to get the word out about that and maybe some options for how that might be able to be replicated in other places too.
And James has his hand raised.
Thank you. My question is how, I'm going to use the word portable, it's not the right word. How portable is the course, for example, for other countries?
That's a great question, James. I appreciate that. My assumption, and Natalie, please help me. But I think the principles would apply to other countries as well. Some of the resources listed, I will say, are probably U.S. and Canada focused. But we would be happy to help. Maybe I track down and identify resources in other countries as well. So, for example, we mentioned the Braille Zoomers that Michelle mentioned earlier, which is a Canadian group. But I think the general teaching strategies, understanding about adult learners, would be applicable to other countries as well. Natalie, I'm going to defer to you on this as well.
Yes, I agree with that. And the other thing to highlight here, which is very exciting, is that we actually shared information about the adult Braille learning resources that ICEB compiled as
Okay.
well. And
Yes.
so that link includes all the amazing resources that all of you shared about, instructional courses or resources that exist in your own countries. So if you have others to add to that, that's always something we could update on the ICEB list of resources as well.
Thank you.
Did that answer your question, James? I hope.
Yes, thank you.
All right, great. Thank you.
And Judy?
I'm going to say something a bit heretical, I suppose. But it seems to me that there are a great many good Braille readers, avid Braille readers, who would like to help teach Braille to other people, to other blind people they know, but they're not teachers. And I'm wondering if there's a possibility, or is it even advisable, to develop a curriculum to teach people who know Braille how to teach Braille to another person or a group of people?
That's a great question, Judy. And I will say, in the introduction to this particular training course, we recognize that. We talk about professionals, but we realize there are a lot of folks with lived experience as Braille users who are interested and have, like I said, that passion, that enthusiasm, and they have a desire to want to learn how to teach a variety of folks. So the course is open to anyone. So anyone can, anybody who's teaching Braille to adults can take this course. You don't have to verify credentials or anything like that. So I don't know if that helps.
Yes, thank
Helps.
you. Yeah, now that is helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, great.
And FM, your hand is up again.
Yeah, sorry. I just wanted to make sure that, Jennifer and Michelle, you are aware of the surveys that are net just now being launched as part of the Global Braille Promotional Awareness project through the World Blind Union and the ICEVI, the National Council of Education of People with Visual Impairments. And we just had, have been two recent webinars launching the project, but there will be a there are four surveys that are being circulated right now to collect information from Braille readers, Braille teachers, parents of Braille readers, and Braille transcribers around the world. Several of us in ICEB have also been involved in that project, and would certainly welcome your assistance in sharing information about the surveys, if you're not aware, and I can send you the link.
I was not aware. I don't know about Michelle, but I would love some information. That would be great.
Great, thank you.
James, your hand is up, but I'm not sure if it's up a second time or if it was up from before.
Sorry, I'll take it down.
Okay. I just want to make sure you had the chance to speak if you were wanting to. Judy, there are a couple of
Yes,
observers.
let's take some questions from observers.
Okay, perfect. First, we have a call in from the phone, so I'm not sure who the person is.
This is Michael from the United States, and I just want what was the link for where we can find that course? Where can we find that, and how do we do that?
Sure. I'm going to let Michelle. It's a pretty long one. There's actually several ways to get to it from our different websites. We actually have several websites, but I'm going to let Michelle read from that slide, if you don't mind, Michelle. It's Teaching Braille to Adults slide.
So the URL is nrtc.catalog, CATALOG dot instructure, INSTRUCTURE .com/courses/teaching-braille-2-adults.
And that's the word TO to adults.
Thank you.
Also, everyone was emailed the PowerPoint presentation, so it would be in that as well.
Okay, and our next comment, or our next raised hand is Larry Johnson.
Larry, we're not hearing you if you're talking.
Okay, there I am.
There you are.
Sorry about that. I'm very, very grateful that you've made this contribution with this course. I think it's extremely valuable and could be very helpful. My concern is, how do we persuade the professionals who are involved in the OIB programs, the or, older individuals who are blind programs, to take it seriously and participate in it? There's a real reluctance, my observation is, on the part of those counselors or agency people who are involved in providing services to older persons who lose their vision to introduce them to Braille. How do we overcome that? And what could you perhaps do in an advocacy effort to make sure that they're aware of this course and that some of their counselors or teachers would avail themselves of it?
Thank you, Larry. So glad you're here. So thank you for the question. And for those of you who don't know, OIB programs are older individuals who are blind, independent living services for older individuals who are blind. These are programs that receive federal funding, here in the US to provide vision rehabilitation services to adults 55 and over who have a severe vision impairment. And sometimes it feels like an uphill battle, right? And I would say even with school-aged children and advocating for Braille, for them as well. But for older adults, we continue to just let people know about our course whenever we have exhibits. We were just at two conferences these last 2 weeks where we were actively promoting the course to direct service providers who work in OIB programs. And we also have our weekly communication. So we have several different communication methods through the NRTC where we help promote the course as well. I think it's, once we The more people that we have take the course, find out about it, they tell two friends, and so on and so on and so on. And it just keeps snowballing from there. So, but any suggestions you have for ways to reach out to professionals, we're definitely open to that. But we are excited that, again, people are using it. I can share that at least three university programs that I'm aware of here in the US that train people to be vision rehabilitation therapists are utilizing the course as part of a requirement for their students. And I'm not sure, Natalie, if that's also the case in University of Montreal or not, but we do have that exposure as well. So we're hoping that that's going to help shape future professionals coming into the field. But happy to talk about and brainstorm about any other additional ways we can promote with existing counselors and professionals.
Could I ask one follow-up question, Jennifer? How long are each of the modules?
Yeah, that's a great question. They are text-based, so it's a little hard to say, and I should be able to tell you off the top of my head approximately how many words they are. But I would say, Natalie, you can get through a module within a couple of hours easily. So I would say maybe 8,000 words on average. That's just a rough guess. Per
Okay, so
module.
it would take a person to do one module about what, 20 minutes or 30 minutes?
I would say a little, maybe a little longer than that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All
But
right.
again, it's available on demand. There's a lot of good information in there. So you want to, we recommend taking your time to sort through it. But you could finish it definitely within a few hours. I don't know, Natalie, do you have any other?
Yeah,
Thank
no,
you.
I think that's pretty accurate. I mean, you can probably do it within an hour each module. It really depends on how long you want to take on, reviewing the information that's there. So some people will probably get through it faster than others because of that, but you can do it on your own pace.
Okay, let's take that last hand that's raised.
Okay, this is Tennille Smith. And you'll have to unmute so that we can hear you.
Sorry about that. I came into that session a little late, and I just wanted to check if you had recommendations for those high interest, low vocabulary resources to use when trading adult letters.
Yeah, sure. So there are a lot of times you'll find, and it's not too, you have to be careful. A lot of times, people will recommend starting with children's books, but you be a little careful with that though, because you want age appropriate. Some adults can get kind of offended if things are too childish. So that's one possibility. I know here in the U.S., like Reader's Digest, the type of reading material is often good. The stories are short. The vocabulary is somewhat lower, but they're high interest books. Natalie, any other suggestions from your recollection of our
Yeah,
resources?
those are all great. In Canada, we have high interest, low vocabulary. I don't want to say that the opposite way because that would not be as fun. Low interest, high vocabulary. Through CELA, our accessible library service. So, depending on whether you could get access to that, that's an option as well. But we also talk about in the course, again, ensuring that it's meaningful and motivating. So a lot of the time you might find maybe blog posts about topics of interest to the learner, everyday language that people are using when they write, that you can produce in, uncontracted or contracted braille, double space braille or not, and that way it's something of interest to them.
And dare I say, you can do some get some readability statistics on materials if it's in a Word document and you just wanted to check what the readability is of it. You might get a grade level for that. That can give you an idea. You may, I say, dare I say, even ask AI to create content. That's what a lot of teachers are doing now, and they'll even ask it to control for certain contraction use and things like that. But you could say, what give me an example of something that's high interest, low vocabulary on the topic of whatever the person may be interested in, and just check out what it comes up
And
with.
use. Yep, no, that's thank you very much.
Yeah,
All
that's
right.
great. That helped.
This has been extremely interesting, and we could go on for the, with this for a long time. But I want to thank Michelle and Jennifer for your contributions. This has just been absolutely fascinating. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate the opportunity.
Yes, thank you. And I'm showing one of the last slides of Jennifer's slide.
Yes, so it's just a quote from Louis Braille, that Braille is knowledge and knowledge is power.
That is true.
And then I just wanted to remind you that there are the at the back of the slide deck, there are the publications and a link where you can find the publications if you want to read more about the research results.
All right, terrific.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, so we are at
20 p.m. and 36.
21:40. Why don't we take a 10-minute break and return at 21:50?